This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
All right, so 25 years ago, Doc Gooden pitched his no-hitter against the Seattle Mariners at Yankee Stadium. It's hard to believe Don even mentioned this earlier, 25 years, but
yeah.
Let's ask the guy who did it. Doc is nice enough to join us now. Doc, it's Michael, Don, and Peter. How you doing?
Good, good. Hey, guys, how you guys doing? I listen to you guys' show all the time at either radio or live on TV. Love what you guys are doing, and thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much. Does it seem like 25 years, Doc?
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, you know, it's amazing how fast time goes. And, you know, today, obviously yesterday I knew it was coming up, and then today, you know, I wake up and I'm like, wow, 25 years. It's amazing. It's that, you know, obviously getting older, because I actually just had a great-grandkid. So this 25-year thing fit right in.
Wait, you had a great-grandkid?
Unbelievable.
Oh,
yes,
my.
I just had my first great-grandkid. You believe that? Unbelievable.
You started early, Doc.
I did, and then my kids started early, and now it's like my grandkid is starting early.
Wow. Wow.
Yes. But it's all good. You know, kids, they're all blessings, you know. But,
absolutely.
I can never truly retire, that's for sure.
So you've had a lot of great moments with the Mets. You won World Series with the Yankees. Where does that, just on a personal level, where does that no-hitter stand?
Oh, man. And from a personal standpoint, it's definitely number one. Obviously, you know, winning a World Series and all the awards you get, it's, you know, for the team, you feel great. But from a personal standpoint, definitely a no-hitter because of where I was previous and what was going on at the time. You know, the year before, being out of baseball, then getting an opportunity by Mr. Steinbrenner and the Yankees to bring me in. Then I started 0-3. They didn't know whether to send me down or release me. I basically got benched. And when a pitcher gets benched, that means you don't get in if you're up 10 or down 10. And unfortunately, David Cone got the aneurysm in his arm, and that gave me an opportunity to get back into the rotation. And I think it was my fourth start, if I can remember correctly. And to have that happen again against Seattle, my dad was obviously sick. He had been on dialysis for 15 years, and then his heart started to fail. I was supposed to go home that day to be with him because they felt like if he didn't have the surgery, he wouldn't make it. And even if he did have the surgery, the chances are he wouldn't make it. So I had a ticket to go home. I figured he would probably want me to pitch. And I could just think back to all the times I spent with my dad at the playground, teaching me the mechanics and everything else, having the father-son conversations, going to watch the 600 Raiders spring training, all that. And I just felt he wanted me to pitch. So I told Joe Torre I was coming in to pitch. He said, no, go home, be with your father, spend much time you need, come back when you're ready. I said, no, I'll see you guys tonight. Then I called my mom. And that was pretty tough because she felt that I should be with the family by my dad's side, giving him all the support. He was suspecting me. The family was suspecting me. But I said, Mom, unfortunately, I think he wants me to pitch. And I actually hung up on my mom, which, you know you don't do that. But I had to because I was feeling bad and guilty. And the first 3 innings of that game, you know, you're wondering if you made the right decision or not. Sometimes I was tearing up. You know, I was standing in a walkway between the dugout and the clubhouse. And Steve Donahue, the assistant trainer, was right there, you know, by my side the whole time. And to get through that, not to the sixth inning, is when I realized I had the no-hitter. I was able to put my dad's situation aside. I looked at the scoreboard to see what hitters was coming up for Seattle, and you see no runs, no hits, no errors. And at that point, you know, obviously you get a little nervous, your heart stopped beating a little faster. Put my dad's situation aside and to finish that game. And it was truly, truly amazing. I remember my teammates came off the field, and all I could think about was the year before being suspended from baseball. The Mets want to cut ties, back in Yankee Stadium, getting an opportunity, starting the bullpen, on the verge of getting released, was sent down. Mr. Steinbrenner believing in me, Mel Stoudemire believing in me. And then, you know, is my dad going to be okay? All those different emotions going through your mind. And obviously, after the game, I didn't sleep. I took a ball from the game with me the next day when I flew back to Tampa to see my dad. At that time, he was on life support. And a couple days later, he passed away. But the last game he saw me pitch was a no-hitter. So from a personal standpoint, by far, that game stands out more than anything in my career.
I'm trying to find it, Doc. Do you remember how many pitches you threw?
Oh, man, I think like 134 was off the top of my head. A lot of pitches. I mean, any other game, if one no-hitter going, I'd probably been out of that game in the sixth or seventh inning. I remember Mel Stoudemire came out to the mound in the ninth. So I walked two guys, and if you guys remember, the score was 2-0. And he said, how do you feel? I mean, I was gassed. No doubt about it, I was gassed. But I had to come that close. I said, you know, I'm fine no matter how I feel. I'm not coming out of this game. And Mel kind of looked at me and said, it's your game.
Wow.
And luckily, I was able to pitch it. And the last game the last pitch I threw to Paul Sorrento was a hanging curveball on a tee. And he popped it up. I'm sure he tried to muscle up and hit out of the park, but 9 out of 10 other times, besides that night and what was going on, that Paul probably was a home run. Because the hanging curveball was just sitting right there.
Now, Doc, you obviously, it's such an amazing story with the way things started for you at the Mets, and then you end up coming all the way back, getting a no-hitter with the Yankees. Your career was obviously very different than this guy. But when you see what Matt Harvey's gone through, the greatness that he had briefly with the Mets and now trying to sort of put it back together and have a career, do you ever think about your situation, how far away you were just a few years after from 1986?
Oh, you're right. You're right. It's similar. And I thought about that when he came back with the Orioles the other day, the pitching against the Mets, because I've never been in that same situation, where I was out of baseball for a previous time and – again, he took an opportunity. I came back to pitch at Shea. It was a day-night doubleheader where the day game was at Shea, night game was at Yankee Stadium. And so I reminisced a little bit when Harvey did that. It's just a situation where, obviously, you lose confidence in yourself. I lost a lot of confidence in myself, but success brings confidence back. And obviously, you got to change the way you pitch because you're not the same pitcher that I was or that he is. You have to accept that and be okay with that and learn to make the adjustments. It's easier said than done because when you've been on top of the game like that, like he was for a short period of time and how I was for a short period of time, your ego won't allow you to make those adjustments where you're throwing breaking balls, you know, behind an account, you go on at location, you change the speeds, all these different things where up until that moment, you fell behind the account. If it was 2-0 or 1-0 or 3-2, if I was pitching, it was automatic fastball. It's like, here it is, hit it in my prime. By the time I got to the Yankees or later in my career with the Mets, you know, I was throwing 2-0 breaking balls, 3-1 changeups. You just have to make the adjustment and be okay with it.
I'm wondering, Doc, we're talking with Doc Gooden on the 25th anniversary of his no-hitter against the Mariners with the Yankees. When you watch Jacob DeGrom pitch now, I mean, I know you so well from your time with the Yankees. I hope in my soul that you really got to enjoy how great you were. I mean, you were a phenomenon when you first came to the Mets. What Jacob's doing, does it remind you of your greatness when you were in Queens?
You know, that's a great question because in my prime, to be honest with you, I enjoyed it. Like, say, when the game was over, you enjoy that moment, but then 5 days later, you're out there doing it again. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it during the offseason. Like, offseason of 85 was fun, but then you're out there, you're not really aware of the things you're doing or the numbers you're putting up because you're in that moment. You know it's something special, but you don't really know how special it is until you're not able to do it anymore. And you look back at it and you say, wow, it'd be good to do it again. Or in my case, once I retired and you share those moments with your family or your friends or your team, the fans, or you look back at it. Or like you just said, as I'm watching DeGrom do this, and I'm one of the biggest fans, I still love the game of baseball and obviously love watching him pitch. I circle those dates, every 5th day I circle on my calendar. And my days are worked around his thing because I watch that and I see the excitement he brings. And looking back at it, now I understand from when I'm right across fans and they say, man, when you pitch in 85, everything stopped. We watch you. No matter what was going on in our house at that time, you brought joy. Those type of things. And so now I can relate to that and kind of get a feeling what they felt like during my time because when me and my son watch him pitch, if we're there watching together, the joy that it brings, and we're watching, we're totally locked in and said, man, this might be the night of the no-hitter every time he takes the ball. It's fun, so I understand a little bit. But to your question, I wish I would have enjoyed it a lot more than I did at the time. But I think when you're in that moment, you feel like that's your job, that's what you're supposed to do, and you're not really aware. Well, I wasn't aware. I was very young of what I was doing or the records I was breaking or the season he was having. But when it's all over and said and done, and you look back at it now, it's a lot of fun. You're able to enjoy that with your kids and grandkids. Mm. And watching him do it definitely brings back memories of where I was at that time.
You know, Doc, they were just showing the 85 stats when you won the Cy Young. You know, 24-4, 1.53 earned run average, led the league in innings with over 276. You wouldn't be allowed to do that today. You know, you'd pitch 200 innings. You'd have the same earned run average, but maybe half the wins. Would you be comfortable with the way pitchers are asked to not go the distance? Would you have been comfortable with a great year and it not really show up in the win category?
No, not at all, because, I mean, I understand that's the way the game has changed now, and that's where baseball's gone. But during my time and before my time, a starting pitcher, when you take the mound, your goal and your mindset is to go to the complete game. If you happen to come up short, you want to be at least 7-8 innings. Now, nothing against the pitchers because they're not allowed to. And I feel bad watching these guys, especially DeGrom, because obviously the way he's pitching, I mean, we could talk run support, what have you, but he definitely, a lot of these games, his pitch count is not that high where he could go deeper in the games. But I think with this analytics stuff, to me, certain things are okay, but a lot of it for his pitchers is blown out of proportion, in my opinion. But if that pitch is there, it would definitely be tough because every time I went after the pitch, I wanted to go 9 innings or at least come close to that.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Doc Gooden is our guest here on the Michael Kay Show. Doc, what do you think of Gerrit Cole when you see him pitch? Are you a fan?
Definitely a fan. That guy is amazing. I would love the opportunity to meet him and just kind of pick his brain a little bit to see what he's doing. But he seems like he's definitely a student of the game. A lot of times with guys like that, you hear, oh, man, he's got all this talent. Yes, he does have talent. But also, I think a lot of times when you see great pitchers like that, they don't get credit for being a student of the game, how to dissect hitters and how to attack hitters' weakness. He definitely does that, and it seems like every time he takes the ball, you know, his last several years, and especially this year watching him, this guy's fun to watch, and I look forward to getting an opportunity this year to go watch him live. Hopefully him and DeGrom get to face each other when they play each other this year. That would be awesome.
Oh, that would be amazing. The last thing you are is a guy who brags on yourself, but when you – and I'm just asking a serious question. You watch DeGrom and Cole pitch, and then you remember 1985 Doc Gooden. Who was the better pitcher of the three?
Oh, man. Oh, wow. That's a tough one because it's a different generation. But I would say me. I'm going to take me.
Why not, right?
Why not? I'm taking me, hands down.
So how many strikeouts do you think you'd have today, man, with launch angle and guys not caring about making contact? Do you think you'd have over 300 strikeouts?
You know, that's a good question because I was a high fastball pitcher, and these guys now – I mean, batting average don't count anymore. It doesn't matter. You know, moving guys over, it doesn't matter. Everybody's going for the home run. So I think that'll work to my advantage. But the 300, I think if I was allowed to go complete games or pitch deep into games, yes. But 5 or 6 innings is going to be tough for these guys to get 300 innings. I mean, 300 strikeouts, sorry. I think, or especially 20 wins because of the way things are now with the pitch counts and the innings and all that stuff.
Can you believe when you watch – I can't believe it. And, you know, I didn't play. You did. It seems like batters don't even care about striking out anymore. I mean, every game, you combine the two teams, it seems like there's at least 25 strikeouts. It's a different world, Doc.
No, you're right. I agree. It's totally different. You imagine, like, Paul O'Neill, if he played now, he struck out twice in a game. Oh. I mean, he'd break the bat. So what a cool guy. This guy was a true warrior. And the thing is, you're right. It don't mean anything. Guys strike out 3 times and hit a home run, they're happy. I don't understand it. I understand that's where the games went. But at the same time, you would think pride got to come in somewhere. I mean, even going back to Little League, high school, college, or what have you, nobody wants to strike out. But now, you know, all you guys want to do is hit home runs. That's what it's all about. You hit 30 home runs, you hit 210, you had a great year.
You know, one more thing, Doc. I was Joel Sherman wrote a story about the 25th anniversary today in the Post, and I didn't even realize this. The reason that Gerald Williams was in center field for your no-hitter was because Bernie, who was like an Iron Man, never came out. He had like a little calf issue. And I don't know if Bernie makes the catch on deep drive. I mean, when you look at all the highlights, that catch by Gerald Williams is amazing, Doc. That was probably the thing that made it a special night.
Oh, no doubt about it. You're right. And not to take anything away from Bernie, great outfielder, but Gerald is probably one of the few guys that I can think of that makes that catch. And the thing amazing, when I look back at that game, I remember walking Braggs to start the game off. And then A-Rod hit that ball, and Gerald had his bike turned to the infield, throws the glove and make the catch, and double breaks on first. If he don't make that catch, Bragg scores, and A-Rod's on third with Griffin Martinez coming up. It's a slim chance. I could get knocked out the first inning because you got to run in, man on third, no outs, and these guys coming up. That could have changed the whole ballgame right there.
I mean, the thing that makes that no-hitter even more impressive, just look at that lineup. I mean, A-Rod, Griffey, I mean, all of them in their prime. Edgar Martinez, I mean, that was not an easy lineup to navigate.
Oh, man, that tough lineup, very tough lineup. And I don't think I've had better stuff than I had that game, even that season, and obviously my prime. But it just so happened that I made the pitches when I had to. But you're right. When you look at the lineup and you look at who I was in my career, you wonder, right, how did that happen? Just amazing. I think just the timing of it and everything that was going on that day helped make it possible.
And, you know, people don't realize this, especially a generation that didn't get to see you play. You could hit. I mean, you had 8 career home runs. Was it difficult to go to the American League and not hit?
Oh, man. Now, this is a subject I love, hitting. All pitchers love to hit, especially during my time. It was a big adjustment because now you don't get to hit. I love to hit. You know, in my mind, growing up as a kid, I wanted to be a hitter, but obviously pitching was my ticket. But I did miss that. I did miss hitting. And then plus, going to American League, you got to face the designated hitter, which is another hitter you got to face. It's a totally different game plan you have to have. And David Cone helped me out a lot making an adjustment from National League to American League on how you pitch guys and make the adjustment.
I got to tell you, Doc, it's a thrill for the three of us to have you on and talk about the 25th anniversary. And this is the first time, Doc, in my life that I've ever talked to a 56-year-old great-grandfather. So that's a big deal, too.
Oh, you have to go there.
It's amazing. I said, wow, no. Doc's just 56. I'm 60, and my kids are 6 and 8.
Yeah.
No, I hear you. You're right. And the thing is, here's another kicker for you guys. I actually have a grandson that's older than 2 of my kids. How about that one?
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
That's a Southern thing there. But, you know, all kids are blessed, man.
Wait a minute.
When people congratulate me on being a great-grandfather, I don't know whether to say thank you or, you know, I don't know what to say. But it's great, though, to have them. It is.
Yeah, they keep you young. Doc, great talking to you. Sound great. Congratulations on the 25th anniversary. And thank you so much for being so kind and listening to the show. We appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you guys for having me, and I look forward to watching you guys and listening to you guys tonight as well.
All right. Good stuff. Thanks. Thank you. That's Doc Gooden. What a great story, huh?
That is.
I never heard the part about how he had to hang up on his mom.
I know. That was just I can't believe it was 25 years ago. And, I was trying to find how many pitches he threw because he walked 6. And he had a couple of wild pitches, and it was a close game. There's no way he would have lasted today. They would have pulled him much earlier just because of the pitch count alone. I'm glad he was able to stick with it and get it.
Michael, can you give, like, the brief recap of the way the Doc story went from 86 to where to 96?
Well, the brief recap is, you know, he started to slow down physically, and then obviously the drugs came into play. In 95, he was suspended from baseball for the whole year. And the Mets wanted no part of him, and George Steinbrenner liked him. He was from Tampa, took a chance on him. He started the season terribly, as he said, and he kind of was taken out of the rotation. Then he got back in the rotation. He let Mel Stottlemyre kind of reconfigure what he did, shorten up his delivery. And I think he was 3-0 leading into that game. But he was not going to be starting that game, but David Cone came up with an aneurysm and was in the hospital and came out of surgery, and they didn't have the game was on MSG at that time, didn't have MSG on the TV. So he sat with a transistor radio listening to me and John Sterling call the game. And then they put a transistor radio next to Doc's dad's ear because he wasn't awake to listen to it as well. And he pitched that no-hitter. So all those things lined up. I mean, it's almost like a movie. Because he wasn't supposed to be there. I mean, not many guys would have taken a chance on him like George Steinbrenner did, but George liked to have, you know, reclamation projects. He did that with Doc. He did that with, you know, Darryl Strawberry. He wanted to reach out and give people second chances. And that second chance for Doc, he ran with it, and he ended up winning a championship with the Yankees. So he's a pretty special person in New York baseball history.
One more question related to that. Do you think George would have given those opportunities, those reclamation projects to those guys if they had not been on the Mets? Or do you think the fact that he was so familiar with them being across town that played into it?
You know, I never asked George that, so I wouldn't say. I think that the fact that Doc was from Tampa and the Steinbrenner family is in Tampa, I think that meant something. But the fact that they were stars with the Mets, I'm sure he liked the fact that, hey, I'm going to I'm going to make these guys' lives better when the Mets couldn't. I'm sure that played into it.
Well, listen, he always wanted to collect talent, but I think it was an extra bonus to have former Mets on the team, whether it was Darryl, Kevin Elster, Rafael Santana. I mean, there's a lot of former Mets that he would collect, I think, in the back of his mind, trying to stick it to the Mets, because he got the rivalry. He did, and I think he loved to steal the back pages, and believe me, that was an added bonus that Doc became. I forget what number it was, Michael, the number of pitchers, former Mets, that didn't pitch a no-hitter for the Mets but would go on and pitch a no-hitter someplace else with Tom Seaver and Nolan Ryan. And
David Cohn.
He loved – I'm sure George loved that aspect of it.
All right, let's take a brief timeout. R.J. Batter of the Knicks is going to join us in just a moment. We're excited about that. Knicks have two more games left, and then the playoffs, amazing. And we'll talk to R.J. about that right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.